Kia ora, I'm Sharon Brett Kelly. Today on The Detail, something that's never far from the news, and mostly, it's not good news.
KiwiRail's boss apologetic for yet another stuff-up.
KiwiRail is fronting yet another Please Explain meeting.
It's gone off track with delays and trains that can't run at speed.
Our biggest city could be facing up to 6 more weeks of train cancellations because of heat.
Another day of frustration for Aucklanders trying to make it home for dinner.
So, what's going on? Is it severely underfunded, badly run, or are our ambitions for rail simply overblown? Today, two journalists who have written screeds about it. First, Oliver Lewis, infrastructure editor at Business Desk, tells me what exactly KiwiRail is.
It's a state-owned enterprise, which means that its legislative function is to make a profit like any other commercial business. And it's really got three main parts. So there's the Inter-Islander, there is the freight business, so that's kind of shipping things for Fonterra and other big freight customers.
Mm.
And then there is the Great Journeys.
So they run the trains, and do they own the lines as well, the tracks?
Yes, it's a little bit complicated. There's another company, New Zealand Rail, that actually owns the land, which all the rail infrastructure sits on. KiwiRail leases the land from them for a nominal fee. But yeah, it owns all the track. It owns the infrastructure and all the assets. So in the cities, KiwiRail doesn't run the trains, the commuter trains that we might use in Auckland and Wellington. But yeah, KiwiRail owns all the underlying assets, the rail.
And does it make money, KiwiRail?
So this gets quite complicated. What they've done is they've broken it down into above rail and below rail for accounting purposes. And so back in 2022, I think it was, the last government kind of did a review of KiwiRail's entity form and said, should we keep it as an SOE, or should we change it up, maybe make it like a public goods crown agency, for instance. And what that review found was that if you combine the above rail parts, so all the ships, the trains, the freight, etc., and the below rail, so maintaining this huge network of rail that KiwiRail has, it's not a viable commercial business. And Peter Reedy, the CEO, he likes to draw a comparison between the trucking industry, and said that if trucks had to pay to maintain and own the roads that they use, that wouldn't be viable either. So in terms of the above rail business, freight, tourism, the Inter-Islander, it does make money. So it's bringing in more revenue than it costs to operate those services. But if you offset that against how much has to be pumped in to maintain our very aging rail infrastructure, then no, it does not make money. The kind of goal with KiwiRail that the last government kind of set it up for was that by 2025 or thereabouts, there would have been so much investment to bring the underlying network back to an okay standard across the country that it wanted KiwiRail to operate as a commercial business for that above rail component, so that KiwiRail would fund any further improvements to buy new trains, for instance, etc., through what it bought in an operating surplus and cash.
Mm.
So it's not there yet, but that was the goal.
If Peter Reedy gets his way, would that mean that the track side of things would be split off from the rest of the business? And if so, who would pay that enormous amount of money that is needed to keep the tracks upgraded and in tip-top condition?
That's a good question. There would be no kind of structural split, so KiwiRail would still remain responsible for running the services on the tracks and also maintaining and investing in the tracks. But it's kind of where the funding comes from. So the idea was that through this rail network investment program, this multi-billion kind of capital spend, bringing stuff up to scratch, that the government would only in future be responsible for tipping in kind of ongoing maintenance into the actual network itself, so the rail, physical rail assets, whereas KiwiRail would be expected to self-fund any kind of additional train units and ships actually in the future, etc., to keep its services running commercially.
Is that what is called the Rail Network Investment Program?
Yeah, that was a big change. So that was the first one of those was 2021, and that was kind of a three-year investment program that KiwiRail put forward to the Minister of Transport and the government, Government said, yep.
The government says investment in freight rail has been shunted to the side for too long and will now fund it from the same pot used for roads. This morning's announcement, part of the New Zealand Rail Plan, will see rail integrated into the National Land Transport Fund.
It gave Kiwi Rail kind of certainty for the first time that it would get specific allotments every year for, say, 3 years, and then having a wider 10-year outlook. It sounds like it's going to change, actually, under the new government.
Does it?
Yeah. They love acronyms in the transport industry, but there was the draft government policy statement on land transport, which is it's the government's land transport budget.
Yeah.
So Simeon Brown announced that, I think it was in March or late February, and what that essentially said was that he did not want this National Land Transport Fund. He didn't want road users who pay into it through petrol taxes and road user charges to cross-subsidise rail.
We need to look at a wide range of funding and financing opportunities so we can get the infrastructure New Zealanders need.
And so he was very clear that the only money that would come for rail from the National Land Transport Fund was what freight customers and other users paid into it via the charges that are levied on them. And so that essentially results in kind of a massive reduction in the possible range of funds that Kiwi Rail can access in future years. And so there's a lot of concern from unions and other kind of rail users that this might result in more underutilised lines getting closed down or mothballed.
So under this new government, I get the sense it's very pro-roads and we know that, but is it anti-rail?
I'm sure if you ask the unions, they would say yes. There's a real sense that with the Inter-Islander decision not to have rail-enabled ships, that there is a fear amongst rail proponents and unions that that effectively severs the rail network. So you've got the South Island and then you've got the North Island. And because the main trunk transporting kind of rail freight from Auckland to Christchurch is very important to the South Island's network, there's a fear that the South Island might kind of almost decline and cease to exist over time because of that decision. In terms of whether or not they're actually anti-rail, the government's comments have been quite clear that they view parts of the network as not economical to run. Chris Bishop has been very complimentary and very enthusiastic about the role of kind of commuter rail in Auckland and Wellington. And the government has been very clear that it wants Kiwi Rail only to focus on the kind of high growth areas like the Golden Triangle, so Hamilton, Tauranga, Auckland. That's a key part that might get future investment.
We'll get back to that future investment, but let's talk about the Inter-Islander ferries with Georgina Campbell, the New Zealand Herald's Wellington reporter.
So much going on, and there has been a lot going on for years now, whether it's ferries breaking down and people being stuck on either side of Cook Strait, whether it's, you know, Kiwi Rail saying, don't worry, the new mega ferries are coming. And then there's a change of government and Nicola Willis has said to Kiwi Rail, no, we're not funding those anymore. And now there's the question of, well, what is going to replace this ageing and increasingly unreliable Inter-Islander fleet?
Why does a railway company even own boats?
I think this is a very live question. I get the impression that government and officials are asking themselves this very question at the moment. And look, I'm not across the details of the long history of this inter-island connection, but I think the easiest way of thinking about this is that Cook Strait is an extension of State Highway 1. It could also be thought of as an extension of Kiwi Rail's existing passenger and freight rail service. So, you know, it could be argued that it's in Kiwi Rail's interest to maintain some control over that section of its network.
Right. So let's get to the latest situation. And the question, I guess, is Kiwi Rail going to own these ferries in the future? Can we just clarify, did Nicola Willis say no to the new ferries or to the new terminals which were needed to house those ferries?
Technically, she didn't actually say no to either of those things specifically. What happened was that the government said no to a request by KiwiRail for an additional $1.47 billion for its overall mega ferry project. And just to put that into context, you know, the cost of the project had almost quadrupled since 2018 to about $3 billion. And so without this extra money, that effectively left the project dead in the water.
Plans to build two new Cook Strait ferries have been sunk after the new finance minister refused a $1 billion funding boost. And that means it's back to the drawing board for plans to replace the ageing fleet, and that could take years.
I was certainly shocked. I did not see this coming. And I have covered this IREX project, that's what it's called, Project IREX, for many years. I didn't get a heads up, not even a 10-minute warning from the minister's office saying, make sure you're at your desk sort of thing. It actually landed this announcement on the afternoon of the Press Gallery's end-of-year Christmas party. And I saw Nicola Willis later that evening and gave her a bit of flack for dropping such a bombshell announcement on, you know, what could be considered a festive occasion. Anyway, I think the KiwiRail bosses would have been shocked, because I think the feeling was it was just something that the government had to fund. It was such a vital connection, kind of like a version of, you know, it's too big to fail. We'd already locked in the fixed price contract for the ferries themselves that was signed back in 2021. They've spent years on this project and years insisting that this was the best solution. This was the only solution. It had to be these mega ferries. They'd invested time and money in the vision, and then all of a sudden they're kind of back to square one.
And you've been working on this story for years. Were you convinced by that argument?
Look, they had a business case. They went through the process. They did everything correctly. I think in the early days, I was actually just more relieved that there was a plan, because when the Kaitaki lost power in Cook Strait,
endangering hundreds of lives as the vessel drifted towards rocks,
I was working that day. It was the weekend of the Auckland floods. I had, you know, spent the whole day reporting on the Auckland floods, and then there's this issue that crops up. Something's happening in Cook Strait. I ring the harbour master. Unbelievably, he answered my phone call. And I said, what's going on? And just the tone of his voice, clear, calm, collected, it's a mayday call. They've lost power in Cook Strait. There's hundreds of passengers on board. They're drifting towards the south coast. Like, I can't quite articulate the kind of feeling that gave me. I had goosebumps. I was really scared, and I was trying to get the attention of my Auckland bosses, who were rightfully focused on the Auckland flooding, saying, wow, this could be a major disaster. Like, we need to pull some resources into this. And so that really scared me. And so I always felt, well, at least there's a plan to replace these unreliable ships. And so I feel like I've been brought back to that space where I'm nervous that there's, you know, the government says they're working on a plan, but technically there is no solid plan B yet.
Nicola Willis's famous line about Ferraris and Toyotas.
The Ferrari is not the only car in the garage. And at the moment, the option that KiwiRail has had on the table is the equivalent of the Ferrari. And now we're going to go off and see whether there are some good, reliable Toyota Corollas available.
Or Teslas.
Which might mean that we
maybe
don't
Teslas?
Need to spend... Or maybe Teslas.
Was there some truth in what she was saying? As in, were these mega ships just a little bit too flash and we could have gone for something a bit simpler that was still reliable?
It's a clever line, isn't it? I like the line. I think there is some truth into it. You know, if we just run through some of the facts that were put out at the time that these ferries were announced, they would be nearly 40 metres longer and at least 5 metres wider than the current vessels. The two ferries would be able to carry twice as many passengers as the current 3-ship fleet, 300% more rail wagons, and almost double the number of trucks and other vehicles. The new ships would be much more fuel efficient and produce significantly lower CO2 emissions. They'd be high tech, with the sort of latest technology and systems and able to run on battery power at times. And Kiwi Rail was future-proofing the design so new fuel sources could be adopted as they became available. But importantly, I think the idea was that they were going to be able to last a long time, primarily because they were new. What I don't want to happen is for us to find second-hand Toyota Corolla versions of the ferries that will soon also reach the end of their working lives, and then we'll be back facing the same problem, so just kicking the can down the road.
What sort of urgency is there for finding a replacement?
It's urgent. Like, these ships are old, they are increasingly unreliable, they are messing people around. I go back to that incident with the Kaitaki, that was really scary. I think that paints the picture of the urgency with this. Finance Minister Nicola Willis makes the point, well, look, actually, at the moment, nothing has changed because the first of these two mega ferries were not due to arrive until 2026. So, you know, even if the mega ferries were still coming, we'd still be in this situation. Now, she will not commit to having replacement ships on the water by 2026. I think that that is something that the government needs to do, because it's a political risk. You know, what happens if there is another Kaitaki incident, say in 2026, and they haven't got new ships yet, and this time the ship doesn't narrowly avoid disaster? So there are a few things up in the air, but in my view, I think there needs to be a plan in place and implemented by 2026.
But no word on from the government or from Kiwi Rail on what that plan might be?
No word. We are sort of operating in a information vacuum.
Given it's a commercial matter, I would be putting taxpayers at risk if I was to speculate on that.
Even information relating to the government's decision not to fund Kiwi Rail for this project any further, has not been released yet.
We still don't know the cost to break the contract. I've heard some astronomical monies in US dollars to break contracts
like
out
what?
Of ships.
Like what?
Maybe 200 million US to break the contract.
Treasury and the Ministry of Transport say that they are working on a proactive release. This has been going on for months now, but I'm very much looking forward to when all of that information is proactively released, because it will give us a better idea about what could be happening behind the scenes and what sort of advice they've received.
You're really digging away trying to get more information. You've been asking for details like the communications between the minister and Kiwi Rail bosses through the Official Information Act. What kind of stuff have you been finding out?
I've been getting a lot of emails saying, sorry, we are declining your Official Information Act request on the basis that this information is soon to be proactively released.
How much is it going to cost to terminate the contracts with the shipbuilders?
Well, there's a commercial negotiation taking place, so it wouldn't be appropriate for me to speculate on that.
But some of the, I call them breadcrumbs, because it is like breadcrumbs, it's tiny bits of information. But a Ministry of Transport briefing was released under the OIA, and that floated the possibility of Kiwi Rail actually exiting the ferry service. So back to that live question of why does Kiwi Rail even own these ships? So this briefing is in relation to the government asking the ministry to lead an assessment of the long-term requirements for a resilient connection across Cook Strait. So the document itself is the ministry's proposed approach for that assessment. So it says the cancellation of Project IREX, that's the mega ferries, leads to the possibility that Kiwi Rail may not want to or may not be best placed to provide an inter-islander ferry service over the medium to longer term. The briefing said market forces have been relied on to provide a resilient Cook Strait connection in recent times. Kiwi Rail, as a state-owned enterprise, is required to run commercially. However, the document says the experience with the mega ferries suggests it may need a government subsidy to operate ferry services. And officials said, you know, there is a risk Kiwi Rail may exit the inter-island business without one. So that was fascinating to me, that they are sort of looking at this hypothetical situation in which, you know, Kiwi Rail doesn't provide a ferry service anymore, which is,
but, yeah.
Like, the honest answer to that is that We don't know what they're discussing. The government has commissioned a ministerial advisory group to give them advice on options and independent advice to what KiwiRail has told ministers. And I think that's normal and healthy, considering that KiwiRail has been so wedded to these mega ferries. It's good to bring in some independent people to look at the situation.
What now, Georgina?
Isn't that a great question? I wish I knew. I wish I could be a fly on the wall in some of these conversations. KiwiRail seems to be looking at the second-hand market for ships. I would be hoping that we'd know more by sort of mid this year.
I guess to put it in context, in 2023, that financial year, KiwiRail spent, I think it was like $1.3 billion on its capital investment. So that's maintenance and new infrastructure. That's the most we've ever spent on rail in a single year. KiwiRail would say, and it argued in its briefing to the new minister, that the government should finish the job that was started by the previous government and that it should continue to invest in bringing parts of the network back up to a very acceptable standard and then get to a point where KiwiRail can operate commercially as a viable entity. Probably the more likely option going forward, given the signals we've seen from Simeon Brown and others, is that you'll see a retrenchment of the rail network. So you'll still see the commuter services in Auckland and Wellington. Those are crucial and they're key. But you might see some regional lines mothballed.
Such as?
I think there's one in Gisborne, which is particularly unreliable. And there's also the a lot of kind of flooding and issues with the Northern line north of Auckland, which would really get in the way of the idea of shifting the port to Northport. But
It's another issue.
Yeah, it's another well-traversed issue. But yeah, I think there's a fear amongst unions that we'll return to a more kind of managed decline state on parts of the network, and there'll be a real emphasis on only investing in high growth corridors like that Golden Triangle and potentially around the Wellington region. But I think that there's a real signal from this government that they don't share the same enthusiasm with the previous government for investing a lot of money into rail. Which is slightly ironic because Shane Jones and Winston Peters were ginormous boosters of KiwiRail and secured a lot of funding for it when they were in the previous coalition. I'm not sure where their thinking is, why they've gone so quiet on rail in recent months.
So nobody really knows where they stand on it.
They've just been very quiet about it, which is at complete kind of odds to when they were last in government. So when they were 2017 to 2020, Winston and Shane would go to kind of events of KiwiRail fixing a line or opening a new station or whatever with the hi-vis, and they'd be very visible at any kind of rail-related event. You know, they had like the controller hats on and they were kind of widely seen as boosters for the rail industry. But they've been conspicuously quiet for this term of government so far about rail and where their thinking is.
That's it for today. The Detail is supported by RNZ and NZ On Air. This episode was engineered by Ben Pearce and produced by Alexia Russell and Davina Zimmer. Thanks to Ollie Lewis and Georgina Campbell. I'm Sharon Brett-Kelly. Ka kite.